The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. The Investment Fix podcast. Tune in today.
Me and my best friend used to do that when we were little. We used to go, can I have another one of those yummy ice blocks to her parents? And you know what? Worked every time.
Tena koutou katoa, welcome to Gone By Lunchtime. It's Wednesday today, according to several highly placed sources. It's Wednesday early afternoon.
I heard that.
Because for reasons, it's very boring to explain the reasons, but we couldn't do it yesterday on Tuesday morning. So here we are, the weekly edition of Gone By Lunchtime. Kia ora Annabelle Lemaitha.
Kia ora Toby.
Kia ora Bess.
Kia ora Toby.
And most importantly, a big shout out, which we feel is important to do as part of the co-pupper of the podcast every week. A big shout out to the bad boys of Brexit. Love you, bad boys.
You're
listening. The bad boys of Brexit, the soy boys of Brexit.
E rere ananga mihi kia rātou.
Some amazing. Hanging out in the local Tory tea room.
Well, it's
being overheard.
I mean, Winston Peters has been banging out the tweets lately. Here I am at St. Luke's. Here I am at Sylvia Park.
With some really alarmed-looking Indian family.
Like, who is this man cowering behind me that taking these photos? This is the sort of shit you get with the bad boys of Brexit. You don't know how many dimensions of chess are being played here, ladies and gentlemen.
Just mayhem.
Big shout-out to Flick Electric. Huge shout-out to Spinoff members who keep this high-level analysis ticking over. And also, before we get into it, I want to invite Gone By Lunchtime listeners to subscribe to our new podcast, Conversations That Count. Ngā kōrero whaitake, hosted by Stacey Morrison, who is...
Oh, she's my favourite.
One of the great New Zealanders, I think we'll agree.
Absolutely.
I met Stacey Morrison when I was a 20-year-old in a green room for one of those 7 p.m. shows, and I was about to get roasted on air.
Yeah.
And she was really nice to me.
Wow.
So I'm going to be subscribing.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
She's going to be discussing the ideas, it says here, that are shaping the future of Aotearoa. Produced in partnership with Massey University, the first episode looks at equity and equality in New Zealand's education system. And next month, what a successful legal cannabis system would look like. Subscribe to that, subscribe to this. We're doing quite well in the... in the old podcast charts lately.
We're like the 19th most popular podcast in New Zealand.
It went up to 10th briefly. I mean, we're not like hitting the highs. But
that's pretty high.
My view on it is that we're now getting into the territory of the true crime podcasts.
Mm.
And if we could do just like one little murder, just...
I noticed that Tina's not here today.
Hi, Alice Webber-Dole, wonderful to have you back in the seat. How are you?
I'm really well, thanks. Feeling great.
Seen Tina Tiller around?
Or
is it a mystery?
No comment.
And we'll return. Now what we do is we return to Alice in another episode.
Mm-hmm. Tease it out.
That's how it works. Mm-hmm. After some pretty frenetic weeks in New Zealand politics, it feels like things have settled down a little bit, maybe. There was a story in the newspapers over the weekend about people getting cross. I think Judith Collins, who I think is currently the leader of the National Party, was cross, and other people were cross about their hoardings being knocked down. People are knocking down billboards. And you felt like, yes, this is it. This is the kind of – this is the true spirit of an ordinary New Zealand election.
Mm. I love the creativity that hoardings seem to invoke in young New Zealanders, like a wonderful array of moustaches and pumped up slogans, and it's like Christmas for me. I feel more excited about what how people deface, you know, hoardings than I do when I see a Christmas tree.
And it's a bit retro, you know, in this day of Instagram and Photoshop, you can take the easy way out, like that new Conservatives candidate who MS painted racial abuse towards himself on his own.
And it still had the cursor on the picture.
And
it was good.
And, you know, getting out into facing billboards is old fashioned, fresh air, exercise. Mm. It's actually quite hard to take down one of those hoardings.
Is it? Which
allegedly.
Look, no.
Just this is look, a really look, look at all of your haters are going to love this.
A lot of us have William Wood-esque skeletons in our closets from our youth.
We did have a poll that came out last week that followed the rogue poll, as it was labelled by Jerry Brownlee and co, and that was the Colmar Brunton poll for One News, and that told us it was a poll that was presented in some places as a good news for National, which is an amazing thought that a poll that put Labour on 53% should be good news for National, given shows you how quickly things turn around in New Zealand politics. But it was 53% for Labour, 32% for National, who had been, what had they been?
They were 25% in the News Hub poll.
In the News Hub Read poll?
Yeah. And they were 38% in the previous Colmar Brunton poll, which was taken with Todd Muller.
Yes.
So 1,000 years ago.
Yes, yes. So a drop from 38 to 32. Excuse me. The Greens on 5, ACT on 4.8, which was rounded up to 5, which again is, I mean...
It's impressive.
It's kind of, you know... That's, I mean, that's, how many MPs is that?
Six, which
by my calculations is six times as many MPs as they have right currently. Now.
Yeah, once you go from a one MP party to a six MP party, you start getting into the real danger zone on the list.
Yeah, yeah. There's a bit of a kind of, does anybody know who this guy Dave is? Oh, they're all called Dave, I suppose.
Really? I think there'll be a lot of checking old Facebook feeds. And
oh, yes.
It's like when United Future won the Worm and there were all those like super random people in Parliament and nobody knew who they were or even bothered to remember their name. They left Parliament and were like, bye thingy, see ya. Uncle, what's your name? Why?
There was one who turned out not to be eligible to stand for Parliament. there were a variety of sort of fake doctorates. And the best one was actually Gordon Copeland, who stuck around a bit longer, even after the next election, who wrote an autobiography about his journey of faith. And talked about how he and the woman who later became his wife travelled around England healing people with the power of God, including people with facial deformities. And there's one particularly exciting chapter where he's beset by evil spirits next to a pool in Thailand at a holiday resort. I was talking to a former MP about
this true crime book came out. Podcast is getting better by the moment.
And he said... Yeah, I've been to Thailand. I think I was attacked by the same evil spirits.
Wow. Why are ACT doing well? We've talked about this probably already, so we don't need to go over it too much. But they've managed to get on board a group of people who might have gravitated towards New Zealand First probably before, who are interested in the gun reforms or unhappy with the gun reforms. There are disaffected National supporters, but also, and I think I heard Trish Sherson talk about this, which I think she made a good point, that there is an extent to which David Seymour has actually been a very good opposition MP. And when you're watching the House, just sort of general debate in the House, debate around bills in the House, he seems as well informed as very often the National MPs are. And it seems to me that probably we haven't given him enough credit for that. We've also got the euthanasia referendum, which he's got, you know, everyone who's passionate about that issue, which is a lot of people for whom it's affected personally, have presumably moved towards him. But also that point, you remember when It was the when Labour were in disarray, and Mitiria Ture and Russell Norman were on fire, and they at a certain point started to take on the mantle of the opposition.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
being quicker out of the traps, being more effective. And from time to time, I wonder if David Seymour's
there's shades of that. Can I say I think this is a rogue poll because it completely disproves my theory from about 2 weeks ago that that Judith was going to hurt ACT, that people were going, that she was going to bleed support from ACT. So I, too, like Jerry Brownlee, believe, well, his he thought the other one was. I think this one is, in fact, the rogue poll. And can I say, I think the other reason why his popularity has started to creep up is because we've had breathing space between Dancing with the Stars and when we're at now, and so some of those images have started to be expunged from our memories, and we are actually seeing him more as a credible politician as a result of a couple of big issues, such as the euthanasia bill and the firearms bill.
Was it when you were working with David Ben Thomas that the twerking strategy, was that one of your suggestions?
The twerking was after the 2017 election, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Yeah. Well, if they keep at their current trajectory, that will mean that ACT lifts its vote by at least a factor of 2 to 3 times after the leader appears on Dancing with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars kickstarted Rodney Hyde from a 2-MP party in 2005 to a caucus of 5 in 2008. Here we're seeing similar effects. So actually, Dancing with the Stars can probably take a lot of the credit in the sense that it raises profile. People suddenly know who this guy is.
Are you making a serious point? No, I'm not.
I'm making a serious point. Seymour had incredibly low name recognition back in 2017. As befits, you know, a sort of anonymous quasi-member of the government support party with one person. Now he is a bit of a celebrity politician, but as you say, also a very strong performer. So what it means is he gets those opportunities in the media that he may not, that he couldn't really have in government so much, or as a supporter to government. And he does acquit himself well. You know, he's very articulate. He's across all the policies, and so I mean, you know, he's. What's a good way of expressing it?
Twerking for families.
So you know, there's a reasonable argument that you know per capita ACT is the best party in Parliament. You know, in terms of the performance of its MPs on average. So there's, you know, and the other thing is, you know, the Conservatives. You know, there is that. Kind of conservative vote that, you know, got up to 4% for Colin Craig back in 2014. That doesn't really have a home now. The new cons are kind of insane. All these new Billy Takaha parties, you know, pretty insane as well. You know, that it is a home for the kind of harder right, but not crazy. You know, or not completely crazy people who are looking for a sort of more hard-edged version of National. And I think that's more the pool they're playing in than actually the National vote itself.
Meanwhile, the Greens are on 5% as well, and one wonders whether or not... I sort of half expected that recent polling, and maybe that's yet to come, might see some Labour voters jump ship for the Greens, or at least some of those voters who were Green voters under the Mitiria years go back.
I totally thought the same thing.
So again, this is a rogue poll.
It's a rogue poll.
Because it doesn't necessarily chime with our views.
Because it only has National at 32% and 25% instead of 25%. It's not technically a rogue poll, it's more just a minor jerk poll.
Hello there, Simon Pound here from another spin-off podcast with a little bit of cross-promo for you. If you might be into the stories of Aotearoa's most interesting entrepreneurs and innovators, you might like to check out Business is Boring, the podcast I host that reckons it's anything. But if that sounds like a bit of you, it's available through the spin-off or wherever you find your favourite podcasts.
Hey, if you love the spin-off, the best way to show it is to become part of the spin-off members. It's fun that helps keep us free and accessible to all without a paywall, and it funds some of our most important and respected journalism. Good. The election is on September 19th, but 1 month from today, voting begins. Advance voting opens 1 month from today on September the 4th, and if recent elections are anything to go by, that is the part of the, you know, I think it was roughly 50% of votes were cast in the advance vote period last election. So it's kind of interesting in terms of the way that the elections play out now. Increasingly, the action sort of will happen, really kick on from about a fortnight from now. We've seen also with the end of Parliament this week, the Parliament rises, the valedictory season's been happening. We've seen speeches from, really interesting one from Ian Lees Galloway yesterday, who returned to Parliament and basically said he had to go, and then gave quite an interesting speech. Claire Curran sort of repeated her charges against the media. Sarah Dowie gave an interesting speech, which was pretty amazing in parts, last week. But also we had one of the things that I think was noticeable when you saw the speeches last week was from the National Party you had Paula Bennett, Nikki Kaye and Amy Adams all in the space of a couple of days giving their valedictory speeches, all very good speeches, I think. But those three women between them represent a large senior chunk of the Liberal wing, Liberal tendency, shall we say, within the National Party caucus. All have, you know, a lot of experience there between the three of them. And so talking to a few, I was down in Wellington for a spin-off event, and so talking to a few people around the traps, there is a question about what it means for the National Party in terms of that, what they like to call the broad church. Simon Bridges talked about it in his conversation with Daniel McLaughlin that we hosted in Wellington, which you can watch online. I think we put it up on this feed as well. Ben, in terms of your view of the National Party, there's Chris Bishop and Nicola Willis are flying the Liberal flag. Is there a real risk of a kind of religious conservative part of the party gaining a disproportionate sway?
The short answer to that is yes. A lot of electorates over the past few terms have seen retirements where relatively Liberal MPs, John Key, Maurice Williamson, are replaced by more religiously conservative MPs, Chris Penk, Simeon Brown, respectively. Simon O'Connor's got a mortgage on the Tāmaki electorate, which he'll, you know, he'll have forever. He'll die somewhere in that electorate at some point, which will increase our ratings when we get on the case. But there are, you know, Christopher Luxon, who has all of these sort of big raps seemingly mostly coming from the Christopher Luxon camp itself about his potential as a future leader. He's got, you know, very conservative Christian views. And that's a strain that hasn't really showed up in National too much over the past couple of decades, which isn't to say that conservatism hasn't been strong in the National Party. Mm. I think I remember totaling it up and about 6 out of the 10 front bench of the John Key first term were Catholics.
Mm.
But that's quite different from the more sort of severe social conservatism, I think, that some of these new recruits represent. And this doesn't mean that, you know, they're all terrible, you know, people trying to usher in a theocracy or anything. You know, on the whole, they're all very good MPs. Chris Penk is a very good MP. But they do represent sort of an imbalance in that kind of liberal-conservative, what's the word, kind of, you know, guardians at the gateway, the two equal and opposite forces within National. And, yeah, and I think, you know, recruitment plays a really important part, and these things happen sort of piecemeal over time. You know, one person will be elected in one electorate, And then after a while, you see that there's this kind of this broad trend, which is probably not too helpful, I think, for National.
It's kind of interesting because I think it also shows that there's recognition that that conservative Christian parties tend to implode for whatever reason, and probably if people from that part of the conservative wing of New Zealand want representation in Parliament, that the easiest, most effective way to get there is through the National Party. But again, as we've already talked about, that's sort of changing the makeup and the culture of what the traditional NAP Party looked like and the issues that they cared about the most.
We've seen some of this play out, perhaps, in Auckland Central, which is a fascinating contest for a number of reasons, which we'll get to. But the selection process has been delayed to the extent that it will now there won't be a National Party candidate to replace Nikki Kaye announced until after the first debate in the electorate. What's your insight into the Auckland Central selection process, Annabelle?
I don't know very much about the details of what's happened there, but I do think that Auckland Central is going to be one of the most interesting electorates to watch during the 2020 election campaign because, you know, traditionally it's always been a Labor seat. Was held for my mum briefly.
Except, yeah.
First Māori woman.
Won.
Yes, Sandra.
Full disclosure.
Won.
Was she, I can't remind me, was she National Party? I don't.
Yeah, she was in the Nats.
She was in the National Party.
And I think at that point, as she says, it had sort of become an anybody but Preble situation. So she was able to win in 1993. So it's always had like left wing roots, but there has been a lot of gentrification, you know, throughout that electorate in places like Ponsonby and Grey Lynn. And Nikki held it by the slimmest of margins. But again, she was a very liberal, modern wahine with, you know, strong conservational values. So it'll be really interesting to see whether or not it flips back over to Labor. If Chloe will splinter the vote and push it back towards National, or if we see Tuariki Delamere, who is standing for top, break through the centre and return back to Parliament. And also, actually, another Māori running in that seat too, or who at least contested it last time, Jenny Marcroft. So it's all on for young and old.
Or Vernon Tava. I believe he's Auckland, also Auckland Central,
yes.
So there's a lot to... I think he could come through the middle.
A lot going on.
For people who aren't up to speed, Annabelle's mum is Sandra Lee, of course, one of the most formidable MPs of the... What period was she in the House?
She went in 93 and retired at the 2002 election.
After being Minister of Conservation?
Associate Minister of Māori Affairs, Minister of... Local Government and Minister of Conservation.
Ben Thomas is, of course, the son of Mark Thomas, the long-standing National Party candidate for many things, who isn't standing in Auckland Central, though you thought he was for a minute, didn't you?
I thought he was because there was a candidate called Rob Thomas and who's another apparently perennial sort of gadfly around Auckland local body Tory politics. I mean, and the... You know, these people didn't do their party any favours. So there was a procedural irregularity. The party board was meant to have selected five people to go through to the final selection. They only put two forward. These three has-beens or never-wers or whatever protested. And so it's been held up again. The important thing is just that they get somebody in there quickly to try and, you know, be Nikki Kaye 2.0, in which case their best bet is Emma Mallow, who was one of the two who were put up originally by the board, who is essentially just a sort of a new version of Nikki.
It feels like a bit of a storm in the teacup, although I totally accept the other three candidates you know, concern, because obviously Pākehā men are really underrepresented in Parliament. And, you know, the two candidates that have been put forward, one is a young Sri Lankan woman, another one a Wahine Pākehā, and, I mean, we just have to create these spaces for Pākehā men to have their voices heard. I think it's a bit unfair, but anyway.
Thank you for your allyship on that one.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. The other part of the equation, of course, is that you touched on the Helen White versus Chloe Swarbrick thing, which is kind of interesting. And obviously, a lot of people in Labour Auckland Central. What's the technical term? Deeply fucked off with Chloe and the Greens for sticking their head up, because, you know, they their argument and is to point to the numbers, and the numbers are clear that Helen White was narrowly defeated by Nikki Kaye in 2017. Denise Roche came in a distant third, although between them, Labour and the Greens, between them, Helen White and Denise Roche had enough votes that would have beaten Nikki Kaye. So their argument is, all you're going to do is split the vote. This is deeply unhelpful. This is a betrayal of the cause of the left. We are all set to go. And then saying some dumb things like calling Chloe Swarbrick a celebrity, which is exactly what Team Chloe want to hear, because then they can paint, not without some evidence, the Labour camp is seeming sort of entitled.
I mean, Labour are right. You know, if the goal was for a united left bloc to wrest Auckland Central away from the evil Tories and bring it back home to, you know, the Labour-Green coalition, then that would be the correct approach.
Equally, could you apply that argument, could the Greens apply that argument to Labour in somewhere like Tāmaki Makaurau, whereby, you know, Marama would get a safe run?
And Pēnei stand down.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what they want in Auckland Central, would the Greens...
A quid pro quo.
I mean, there it would only make sense if the goal was to wrest Tāmaki Makaurau away from Pēnei.
It'd be more about making sure the Greens got back into Parliament, especially when their polling is so marginal.
Yeah, look, strategic voting is very hard to organise in actual fact. You know, the times that you can remember it actually working were Jim Bolger slitting the throat of my distant relative Mark Thomas in 1996 in Auckland Central to give Richard Preble a way back into Parliament after Annabelle's family dispossessed him, made him a political refugee.
The film campaign is available to watch on New Zealand On Screen if you haven't. It's glorious.
The Greens, Jeanette Fitzsimons in Coromandel in 1999, I think. Oh, with the Alliance. No, when was it? 2002, 99? Cut that in editing. Insert a man's voice saying date. And obviously, ACT David Seymour. But people forget
and
that...
Northland by-election. I mean, it wasn't quite the same, but it was the same. It was in practice, it was the same thing.
Yeah, the Northland by-election
wouldn't
probably
have happened
true.
That, yeah.
The... People forget about ACT and the sweetheart deal in Epsom, or the dirty deal, depending on how you describe it, is Rodney Hyde actually won that seat off Richard Wirth in 2005. Richard Wirth did not want to give up his plum seat in the Epsom electorate, and there was no real deal made. You know, since then, there's been an understanding that National just leaves it to ACT to keep them in Parliament. But that was not how the seat was actually won initially. I think unless you actually had the Greens teetering on the brink and, you know, an actual word from Jacinda Ardern on high saying, vote for Chloe Swarbrick, even then it's not clear that, you know, you might have some Labour voters who went over to National or something. It's quite a hard one to organise. You know, Rodney Hyde had been very, very close to beating Richard Wirth prior.
So you're
to
right. So the pieces need to be in place, right? You can't engineer it from central office, but I think the pieces could be at play. I mean, the Greens are on 5% in the latest reliable poll. Labour are comfortable in the latest poll. That's governing right. alone in the it's not another question.
Exactly. The thing though is like I just. You know, MMP shouldn't be about doing side deals. It's supposed to be about, you know, better representation, more representation. If you want to contest a seat, contest it and let the people decide. I just think that it's transparent and more democratic rather than doing side hustles.
Annabelle, you mentioned Tamaki Makaurau, which is one of seven Māori seats. Mm-hmm. You, as executive producer of The Hui, what are you doing this year? Are you going to have, can you talk about that? Debates you're planning?
Oh, thank you, Uncle Toby. Wonderful opportunity to promote our program. Yes, in fact, we are having live debates for all seven of the Māori electorates, which will be streamed via News Hub live on Tuesday nights and Wednesday nights starting on August 25th, replayed on television during the week with probably a little highlights package on The Hui on Sunday. We'll have little VTs from the electorate to find out, you know, the big issues on people's minds coming into the election. And we'll also look back at some of the stories we've covered in the Māori electorates and ask the candidates what their thoughts or solutions would be. And
you won't need that many podiums, will you, given the number of
crazy.
People putting their hands up?
It's literally in Hauraki Waikato, there were just three candidates, and now we found out that there's only two because the person who was contesting it for one party apparently has been directed to stand for Hamilton East. And I noticed on the website today that Stephanie Harawira, who was contesting Te Tai Tokiro for one party, has also withdrawn out of that electorate. So it's really
Billy TK is standing in Te Tai Tokiro.
Billy TK is standing in Te Tai Tokiro. There's a party called the Outdoors Party that have a couple of candidates, but obviously mana have gone. But bizarrely, for reasons I can't fathom, the Greens aren't standing in all of the Māori electorates. They're only standing in Tamaki Makaurau, Ikaroa Rāwhiti, and I understand Te Tai Tonga, and nothing in the other Māori seats, which just seems bizarre if you believe in the notion of Māori seats and Māori representation, that after being in Parliament for 25 years, you wouldn't stand candidates in the Māori seats. I don't know. It's
and Labour currently crazy. Has a clean sweep on those seats.
I wouldn't.
Which is the most, this time round, Te Tai Haaru is up for grabs in a big way with Debbie Ngaru Apaka. It's quite a narrow majority that Rufari has.
Yeah, Adrian has a fairly narrow, he has a narrow majority. The thing too for Adrian is that he hasn't developed a strong national profile, although I'm told that he is a great electorate MP, that he's well-loved in his electorate. Debbie is a formidable candidate. She has a huge profile in her electorate. She's developed a strong national profile over the last few months. She speaks out on a range of issues, conservation, COVID, reo, mana whenua, environment, everything. But I think what makes her a real threat is that she has a history in local body politics. So there is already a practice within that rohe of people ticking next to her name. So I think probably, you know, everyone's saying it'll be a safe run for Labour, and I think by and large it will. But if there's one seat that's marginal, I definitely think it's Te Tai Hauauru.
What do you think, Ben? Is there anything else in play, do you think, in the Māori seats? I mean, Tamaki Makaurau could be an interesting one, right? Like, I mean, in terms of the
Well, there's, you know, like
with
candidates.
John Tamihere,
it'll be a noisy one. It's got a lot of right.
It'll be noisy. Right. There's like, candidate. All the candidates are, you know, high profile.
John Tamihere, Penny Henare and Marama Davidson are all, you know, very credible politicians. You know, the debates will be pretty interesting to watch. Sorry. Annabelle just raised her eyes in alarm when I said credible. I mean is credible practitioners of politics.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are heavyweights.
They are, but it's been a long time since JT was actually won an election. So I think that while all of those candidates have high profiles, if there's a seat that you really want to keep your eyes on that really could be at risk of tipping over, it would be Te Tai Hauauru.
Let's round off with the Burnham inquiry, just to touch on it briefly, really, because it's quite a big story that broke on Friday last week, which was the it was a Royal Commission, right? Was it called a Royal Commission?
Gosh, that was an inquiry.
It was an inquiry. But Geoffrey Palmer, your fave, Ben Thomas was on there, and it was pretty thorough investigation into claims around the raid by SAS raid in Afghanistan that was made public by the book by the journalist John Stevenson and Nikki Hager called Hit and Run. And the findings were interesting in that they judged that the SAS had behaved properly on the ground. They also judged that there hadn't been, in their terms, a cover-up. But for all that, there were some pretty troubling and serious conclusions that were reached in terms of the way that the information in the NZDF was sent up the chain, in terms of Wayne Mapp's apparent memory lapse. Annabelle, you had a connection to the story going some years back to when you were on Native Affairs on Māori TV.
That's right. In 2014, we were approached by John about this story, and we supported him to go back up to Afghanistan with Jake Bryant, an incredible cameraman, and we put to air, I think it was a two-part special on Native Affairs about what had happened up there, where John spoke to the villagers who were there that night and gave first-hand accounts of what happened, including the death of a little preschooler called Fatima, who they say had been killed in the operation, which was looking for insurgents who I believe weren't in the village that night. And obviously New Zealand Defence Force was saying that it didn't happen and it wasn't true.
And the inquiry essentially found that, you know, in typical fog of war fashion, a lot of the claims in the book weren't right. Including the identities of the villagers and, you know, people who may or may not have been killed, but that, you know, but this extended both ways, and that the information that had been provided by the military was also very, very deficient.
Yeah.
So it was very good that there was an inquiry called, and shows the need for independent oversight.
Absolutely.
As per the recommendations of the report. You know, we saw how the security intelligence services really upped their game since having that level of oversight. You know, there's far less law-breaking. and
for the New Zealand Defence Force to, I mean, you know, notwithstanding the fact that there was no cover-up, according to the inquiry, that references to civilians having likely been killed were removed from briefings as they went up the chain is seriously shocking. And, excuse me, David Parker, the Attorney General, you know, paid tribute to Hager and Stevenson for creating the book. And I think, I mean, to my mind, while yes, you can say that there were there were parts of the book that weren't borne out by the inquiry, the standard to which they should be held is different to the standard to
Absolutely.
Which the people who are in charge of the armed forces of our country should be held.
Of course, 100%.
The most important elements of the story were true, which is that civilians died and the New Zealand Defence Force didn't come clean about it. And while some of the finer details, like the exact pinpointing of the village or those sorts of things, may have been incorrect, the most important stuff, the stuff that really matters, was true.
So that's us. We've
Ben's
actually
doing,
rattled
Ben's doing
through.
Archie eyebrows at me.
He's doing archie eyebrows at you. I feel like that's quite
Bring
a, that's
that
quite
eyebrow
a
here,
to go
homie.
On a brighter note. With
if you borrow Judith Collins eyebrows this afternoon, what's the deal?
I've got a signed copy of Hit and Run. Do you want it?
No, you hate it. Keep your sign. I've got my own signed copy. I'm in the Ford, so.
Very, very good. Well done, everyone. Best behaviour. Terrific. Thank you very much, Alice, for sitting in today with us. Thank you, Annabelle. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, members. Thank you. Bad Boys Brexit, mostly. Love you.
Bye.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.